Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. My name is Amy Wheeler, and I'm your host for today. And I have a very interesting guest who happens to be my boss. So many of you know that I'm the chair of Yoga Therapy and Ayurveda at Maryland University of Integrative Health. And my boss, my current boss, is the president of our university, and her name is Chris Sachs. And I've had an admiration for Chris and her leadership style ever since I took this job. I've just kind of been blown away at watching and marveling how she's leading us, especially because we're going through a merger with another university, which you'll hear more about. In this episode, we talk mostly about leadership, how hard it is to be a leader, but also how important it is that each and every one of us get to know what our strengths are, what our weaknesses are, and then how to match up our personality, our natural gifts, with the job that we have chosen. And it's hard because many times when you are in a job or a system for a long period of time, you'll start out maybe as an engineer, and then you're supposed to manage other engineers, and then you're going to... That doesn't necessarily work. Moving up the ladder at work doesn't actually honor all of our unique and individual skill sets. So it's really important for us to know who we are, know what we like, know what we're good at, and really match that up with all the hours we spend in the day at work. So we will talk quite a bit about that. And then also from a leadership perspective, it could be in higher ed, but it really could be any leadership, looking at what are the skills of the future. What will we as leaders need to cultivate within ourselves and within our relationships to become the leaders that the future needs from us? It's very different than when many of us started 10, 20, 30 years ago. We're at a kind of a turning point in history, especially with things like artificial intelligence and all the new things that are coming at us. We are going to have to be flexible. We're going to have to be resilient. We're going to have to be able to take new perspectives, kind of drop off what we've always known and what has always worked, and really bring something else forward, an open mind, an open heart, a willingness to learn. So we talk about all of that and more on this episode with Chris Sachs, the current president of Maryland University of Integrative Health, soon to be Notre Dame of Maryland. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. This is Amy Wheeler. We're in the second half of 2025, and we've spent this entire year telling stories of health, healing, and beyond with yoga therapy, yoga, and Ayurveda. I hope you'll join us for the second half of the year where we hear people who are courageous and generous and authentic and kind, telling about their life experience so that they can help others out there who might be going through something similar. Let's get into season 9 and hear more stories about people just like you. All right, on to the show. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Thanks for being here, Chris.
Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to this conversation, Amy.
Okay, we're just going to spill the beans here. Chris is not a podcast listener.
True.
you know, this is a new challenging thing that we're doing today, and it probably doesn't help that Chris is my boss. Let's be honest.
No, that makes it a safe space to practice podcasting.
Okay, good. So Chris is the president of Maryland University of Integrative Health. And Chris, I'll let you tell our audience what we are about to become.
Yeah, so at the time of the recording of this podcast, we are Maryland University of Integrative Health, and we are about to be fully merged into Notre Dame of Maryland University. And so MUIH will no longer exist as an entity with that name, but we will be the School of Integrative Health at Notre Dame of Maryland University. That makes us will make us, now makes us, the first school of integrative health within a comprehensive university in the United States. So we're really excited about that. Lots of new opportunities for students, for faculty at both Notre Dame and the former MUIH. Lots of opportunities for collaboration, interprofessional education, and interprofessional learning and growth for faculty between integrative health fields and, I guess you'd call them, conventional fields. So really looking forward to that final merger date. Yeah.
So just to explain, there's a four-year undergraduate university with all sorts of majors at Notre Dame. But then they also have other graduate programs, such as a PhD in occupational therapy, a physician assistant program.
A school of pharmacy. And school of pharmacy has recently, I know, expanded to have additional programming beyond the traditional PharmD program. Certainly a school of education also as a big provider.
Award-winning.
Yes, award-winning and a big provider of education professionals in the state of Maryland. You mentioned PT, OT, Doctor of Occupational Therapy.
I think I said it wrong. It's a doctorate of OT.
OT, physician assistant, really interesting new art therapy program that they have. And, you know, that's one that to me begins sort of a bridge, a crossover to MUIH's integrative health program. So a lot of opportunities for us. They also have a conventional nursing program at the undergraduate and the graduate level. So really looking forward to those collaborations between the two institutions' types of programming.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing. When I think of it, I just get all excited inside, like it's really happening to us.
It really is. Finally, finally, for your viewers out there, it may seem like, oh, this is just happening. Yeah, this has been in the works since early to mid 2023, I'll just say. So it's been a long time coming for those working on it.
Let's jump right in, because having you on the show today as a leader in the field of integrative health, and I just can't even imagine what you've been through in the last 2 years, personally as well as professionally, to make this merger happen. I mean, there's the pre, you know, do we merge? Then there's the 18 months of trying to figure out how to merge. And then there's going to be some time after the merger happens that it's going to be integrating. Like, how has that been for you?
You know, I don't know if I have one word for you. Highs and lows, smooth spots, rough spots, learning for sure. A lot of learning for me, learning a new role. One of my early things was, okay, this can be a lot of work. And that has certainly proven to be true in spades. I also early on thought to myself, you know, there's not a lot of people that get the opportunity to go through this, to do this, because, you know, yin and yang, everything can be a negative or everything can be a positive, or everything's got both. And so to me, there was going to be the hard work, the long hours, but this was also an opportunity that not many people get to figure out how to do this. And even other schools that have gone through the process, it's probably different every place, because you got two different starting points, two different cultures, two different ways of doing things. So every combination of an acquisition and merger is probably very unique and very different. So just figuring out how to navigate the process, how to do it, to me was an opportunity professionally and personally just to figure it out. So a lot of work, a lot of work, a lot of stress for other people.
You're such a compassionate person that to kind of watch all of us be a little anxious for the last many months, as much as we are anxious, we also recognize that your care of us, we see that you're having compassion for our situation and even your own situation with the gray areas and the unknowns.
Well, thank you, Amy. I appreciate that. I will say that's not something that comes natural to me. That's not how I'm naturally wired. But working at MUIH has cultivated that within me. And frankly, the pandemic and moving everybody unexpectedly remote and sustaining university fully remote for 3 months, when it was a culture that was very used to being in person and very community driven, was good training for all of this, because it was that process of moving remote was very stressful for the community. So I learned a lot through that I tried to apply to the circumstances.
I had no idea because I didn't work at MUH. I thought this was like a natural gift of yours to show up clear, compassionate, kind.
No, that's not how I'm wired.
Really? Well, I'm glad I didn't know you back then.
I am naturally wired as I'm a bullet points kind of person. At an institution I used to work at, we would do these retreats, and the different assistant deans would then get up and give a little summary of what their area had worked on during this working session. And so my former dean one day said, "Well, do you realize I have a strategy how we organize the order? So we always start with so and so because their natural tendency is they're very eloquent and lots of words and very descriptive. And by the time we get to the fifth person, we just need to get out of there. That's why you're always last, because you cut right to the chase and it's all about the bullet points, not how we're feeling about what we just decided. It's what we accomplished." So that's my natural inclination.
So have your values changed, or have you just taken a good self-observation and tried to keep those values of being concise and getting to the point filtered through this more compassionate leadership?
I don't think my values have changed. I think it's just how I do things is a little bit different. Yeah. But left to my own devices, you are likely going to get a post-it note with three or four words on it rather than a paragraph.
That is
So,
fascinating because I really thought that you like had a lot of natural emotional intelligence. And I think there's a group that I follow on LinkedIn. It's all about leadership, and I think you're in that group. But
okay.
basically, they're all about emotional intelligence. So did you also get some leadership training in that area?
No formal training in that area. I have a couple of colleagues. In fact, I have one particular colleague and friend who we like to joke that we are the exact opposite in this way. He knows that he's probably not going to hear from me, and I know he always wants to hear from me. So I've learned a lot watching him interact with people and watching him on the job, watching him when we do conference presentations together. So I wouldn't say it's been formal, just watching others. I referred to that pandemic experience. So I'll give you an example of that kind of learning. As I said, a lot of people found that hard. There was a lack of connection, a lack of community. I had always had this dream of just working remotely or mostly teleworking. So when it happened, I'm like, "Oh my God, I love this so much." But then other people are struggling. I'm like, "Why isn't people not loving it like I am?" So I had to take a step back and figure that out. And so we decided to start these weekly messages, which would give updates and give information. And then over time, it's like, "Okay, there's no more updates, there's no more information." But people came to expect those weekly messages as a way to stay anchored, to stay connected, to feel a sense of community. So, what I had to learn to figure out to do was how to write a message when, from my perspective, there was nothing new to say. There was no update. So, that was a struggle for me. I was like, "Well, I need some bullet points. What am I going to write
I already
about?"
said all the bullet points, and you now want more of the
There's
same bullet points.
no more bullets. So that was a very practical thing. But through that process, I came to understand the value of doing things that had the purpose of supporting others' emotional needs in the workplace. I am really still a work in progress. Just yesterday, I had some folks who were reading a draft message that's going to go out about some upcoming changes. And two of the people said, "This really needs to be softened. It needs something in the beginning." I was like, okay, yeah, you're right. You're right. It does need something." To me, it was just like, "Here's the deal. This is the change.
I
And
might have
here's what we
received
need to do."
this
No,
email.
you didn't get it. It hasn't gone out yet. But that's just it. If something needs work from me, that's probably the thing that most people are going to help me with, comment on, nudge me in a different direction. Yeah.
This is so surprising to me. You're faking it very well, apparently, because I've had a lot of bosses at 55 years of age, and never have I had one that I considered emotionally intelligent and made us feel like we belonged and there was mutual respect. And that hasn't been a thing in academia for me.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear that.
We're going to take just a little break here to talk about something that matters to us at the Optimal State. And that is our Monday night community that has been together for many, many years now. And we'd like to invite you in. On Monday nights, we have a topic of the month. And in October, that happens to be integrating mindfulness into your daily life to manage pain. Now, whether you have pain or you're a yoga teacher, an Ayurvedic practitioner, or a yoga therapist, there's so much to learn about pain care as it relates to emotional intelligence and self-awareness, and basically how to manage ourselves physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So each week we have a yoga sutra that we talk about that relates to the topic. We do some postures, very gentle. We do some breath work, some meditation, and then we come back together at the end for a discussion. So we would love to see you in October of 2025 and join us for our Monday night classes. You can find the link to sign up in the show notes. Thank you for listening. And now we go back to the podcast episode and our guest telling their story.
And you know what? It's great to hear about the belonging and the respect. I think I've always tried to do that without it being about emotional intelligence. So, you know, maybe it's just a different way to come at those two things. Respect to me is, you know, listening to other people's ideas. They're not all workable, but let's just throw them into the pot. Let's brainstorm. Let's think about what the possibilities are. So is there an aspect of that that's emotional intelligence? Yeah, I guess it is. I just didn't come at it from that perspective. Yeah.
Okay, now I'm going to tell you something. I think actually, maybe the word emotional intelligence is a little fluffy here, but even from the very earliest days, like when you had really hard things to tell us about the merger, and there's been a lot of challenging moments, you came in with this very steady, very calm, maybe a little non-emotional, just like, here's how it is, here's what we have to do. That is emotional intelligence. A lot of people would come in with a lot more fire or a lot more instability or
anxiety. I know what you mean.
Yeah, but I feel safe. I feel like whatever you're going to tell me, it may be hard to hear, but there is a basic stability, safety going on. And to me, that's emotional intelligence.
So, you know, what you just described, I'm going to say is how I'm wired. I remember, as far back as middle school, friends of the family, aunts and uncles, making comments like, things just roll off Chris's back. Like, things don't faze her. So I don't think I could take credit for it. I think I'm just wired that way.
Yeah. Well, that to me is what we want in a leader. So,
but sometimes you need leaders who can fire people up. Who can inspire. And I don't think I'm one of those kinds of leaders. I find it hard to find those words and to rally people, to get people like, yeah, let's go do this. To me, it's more of like, this is what we need to do. My sister, who's an athletic coach and an amazing coach, that's what she can do. That's what she does. She finds those inspiring words. She rallies people. We have very different gifts.
Yeah, and it's just about a match, right? When you're in academia, things are slow and steady, and we're supposed to just kind of go along. It takes long to do things. It's a little different than a basketball game, right?
Yeah. I like to call myself, I'm a plotter.
Okay.
I'm not a sprinter. I'm a plotter. You know? And plotting works well sometimes in higher ed, but also sometimes sprinting is what we need to do. By nature, I'm a plotter. Yeah.
Well, it feels good in my nervous system. So.
Okay, good.
More of a sprinter, though. So you shared a few minutes ago about the decision to take on such a big deal as like leading a university through a merger. Is that a pivotal moment, or were there other pivotal moments that kind of stand out to you on your leadership journey?
Not that one. not the merger leadership. It was quite a while ago, and it was kind of by accident. So I was at a different institution, and there was this activity. We were bringing people together from different divisions across the world because this institution had placements everywhere. And so we had never met our counterparts. We had worked together, you know, by email, that's about it, but didn't really know each other. So we did this exercise in advance of that, where everyone was going to take one of these assessments. I'm not a psychologist. I don't know if it's a personality assessment, but, you know, knowing who you are. Okay. So I was an assistant dean at that point. So our unit did it. And then once we each had our results, we learned about them. And then we came together as our unit. And I loved all the people that worked in that unit, but we were always doing things together. And I'm not a together kind of person. So we sat around the table. This was called the FIRO B, and I was inclusion score. So how much you need to be included, how much you need to be with other people, not being an introvert or an extrovert, but how much you need energy from other people. So we compared scores. They were all 7, 8s, 9s. I was a zero. And so, so suddenly everybody around the table, all of them and me, were like, oh, now this makes a lot of sense. And that was, to me, it was like, oh, it's okay to feel this way. This is how I'm wired. This is okay. This is me. I don't always have to go out with it. It's okay. I loved doing it, but it was a pivotal moment in thinking differently about myself. And a couple months later, I did take a week-long session with the Center for Creative Leadership, which was phenomenal. We
That's
did
what I was talking about earlier.
So we did 11 of these. It wasn't really about how to be a leader. It was about yourself. So we did 11 of these self-assessments in advance. And over the course of the week, your results on these were rolled out and considering how that works for you or doesn't work for you in different positions. And so I still have it. It's over there. It's a big three-ring binder. I call it the Book of Chris. But it just, that whole experience, those two things I just described, that to me was really pivotal, because it's like, all right, you're just not good at that stuff over there. That's how you're wired. Not that you shouldn't try to learn and grow and improve in certain skills. But it's like, if that's not who you are, don't focus on jobs or activities that emphasize that. This over here, this is how you're naturally wired. So focus on this. Learn how to work in this other stuff, but really try to focus on this other. That was really pivotal for me.
So it sounds like, number one, to even become aware of this is who I am, but then also accepting that.
Well,
you know, something you're not.
Exactly. And for me, like I said, that very first one was kind of a sense of relief. I was like, oh my gosh, it's okay to be this way. This is who I am.
And they coached you. They said that there's no right answer.
There's no right answer. This is just who you are. Yeah. And I kind of skipped to the end, maybe, Amy, on the questions, which, you know, advice, the thing I love to tell emerging leaders, people coming up, people who are not as old as I am. Best advice is know who you are and who you're not. Don't try to be who you're not. Know what you like to do. Know what you hate to do. Know what you're good at. Know what you're not good at. And then try to find the things, the sweet spot that is how you're wired, who you are, what you like to do, and what you're good at. You want to maximize those three things. Don't choose situations that maximize the what you're not good at, and for God's sakes, what you hate to do.
I could not be more with you.
So, for example, you introduced me as president of MUIH. So I'll say it's not a normal presidency. The goal is to get us through the transition. The typical university president, the primary job perhaps, is fundraising, advancement, donations. I hate to do that so much. It's like way down on the bottom of my list. So to me, it was never a question. Once I realized this about myself, it was never a question. I am never going to be a university president. Why would I take a job where the majority of my job would be focused on something I hate to do? You're setting yourself up to be miserable.
And so in your current job, that's not the requirements.
No requirement.
So different.
No requirement for that at all. Again, it's not a typical president's role.
Yeah. So is there anything that you've learned about failure that you could tell us about as a source of learning or recalibration?
Yeah. So I'm probably going to say things that everybody says. So I think failure is natural. It's just part of being human from my perspective. And sometimes the reason for failure is your own. And in those cases, just own it. Just be comfortable with that. Just own it. If you come to the conclusion that failure is a natural life experience, then just own it when it happens. Sometimes failure is not of your own doing. It's things outside your control. Just accept it. I mean, it happened. You're impacted by it, but just accept it. And I know everybody says, and I truly believe it, that failure is an opportunity for learning. But I think what I've learned the most is that that doesn't just happen. That learning doesn't just happen. You really have to make time for it. You need to be committed to that. You need to be honest about that. You need to be self-reflective. You need to be intentional about that and go into it with an open mind and being authentic. If you've failed, to really learn from it, to grow from it and build on that to be successful in other ways in the future, you've just got to really be intentional about it. That means time, that means work, that means self-reflection. And sometimes those things are very, very challenging.
Huh.
So that's what I've learned the most is it's a platitude. Oh, failure is an opportunity for growth. Yes, it is. But unless you do the work, you don't actually learn and grow.
And I think so many times our ego is involved and we're triggered by what happened. So that is like a whole layer. We have to work through that trauma that's causing the to even be able to do the work on the current situation.
Yeah. And so much of the learning in that respect and failure. And I think leadership, the further you go, you need to be ego-less.
Tell me more about that, because
it's not about me. It's not about me. My job when I was a department chair, there was a lot of ego. There was, you know, but my job really wasn't about me. It was about those students and it was about those faculty. And so the higher I went level of position, that became more and more apparent to me. And ego and my accomplishments became less of a focus, because ultimately there's something to be done. There are people to serve. The job and how well I do it is not really about me.
Yeah. We actually need to educate students in a whole perspective way. Like, it's hard work to get it done.
Yeah. I need to support other people. That's really the job, is to support other people, whether it's students who are studying, whether it's faculty who are teaching, whether it's all the staff who are supporting the teaching and learning experience. That's what it's about. It's not about me and my accomplishments or what I've done. That ability to put ego aside is really hard, really hard. It often creeps in, but there are times where it certainly happened in the last couple of months where I've had to go, okay, this is just not about you. Remember, this is not about you. What happened, how well it happened, what did happen, what didn't happen, it's not about how well you performed or what you didn't do or what you did do or what people perceive of you. It's about, did those faculty and students get served? That's really what it's about. So ego is just really hard, I think, for a lot of people, and often for me, it is a difficult thing to set aside. Yeah.
And I think we see that on two sides of a coin, whether you did really something amazing that helped support everyone, or maybe we make a bad decision or we lose our temper, or like that can be such an ego hit also.
Absolutely.
All sides are kind of a dangerous place to be.
Indeed. That if you can keep yourself neutral in the ego world, that's the trick, I think. You know, being able to, okay, I did a good job there. That's good. I did a good job. People were served in a good way, in a quality way, but not go beyond that to get all puffed up about yourself, to get to the point of, well, the purpose of that was for me to do a good job and to look good at doing it. Yeah.
All right. So now I'm going to change directions. Maybe it's not a change of direction, but
okay.
Let's talk a little bit about being a leader and self-regulation, whether that's in a heated moment when you have to self-regulate, or maybe it's about sustainability over time, being able to have your system healthy enough to function to do all this hard work.
Yeah. So I am somebody who gains purpose and a certain amount of validation from work and doing a good job. I am by nature a workhorse. That's just, again, how I'm wired. I love work. I love to work. Full retirement is probably going to be very, very hard for me.
That will never happen, Chris.
Oh, that's how I said full retirement. So for me, there's always the great potential for burnout, and it has certainly happened a number of times throughout my career. I am not the best model for well-being and balance, work-life balance. I've come to learn the warning signs of burnout. And so I think a point of resilience is to know what the triggers are, to know when you're heading down that path, and then to be very conscious about trying not to go further, really to give yourself a break, to tap into what does bring you that resilience back. Like for me, the minute I start to get impatient with people, with ideas in a meeting, and it's usually in here, I don't usually say it. I hope I don't usually say it or act it. It's usually here first. It's like, okay, I got to back it up a little bit here. I got to ease off the gas. I need to get outside a little more. I need to spend a little more time with the dog. I need to read an actual book that has nothing to do with work. I need to read a summer beach novel, you know? So I'm not the best model here, but for me, the big thing is recognizing the symptoms of burnout very early on.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to pinpoint it down, for me, it's negative thinking because I love job. I'm excited every day. So if I have like a really negative day, that's like, what's happening here? What is that? It's burnout.
Yeah, exactly. That does happen to me too, because usually I'm a pretty positive person, but that might be a second indicator. If I find myself in meetings or talking to people and I'm kind of like, okay, I'm a little Eeyore, like, well, all right, here we go. Let's talk about this awful thing now. Yeah, that's probably, I'm going to watch for that in the future.
Secondary.
Yeah.
So we're getting close to the end, but higher
how did that happen?
I know. Higher ed right now across the United States is in a real bind, not just researchers.
Oh, yeah.
I think I heard something like some crazy statistic, how many universities and colleges are going to be going through these mergers.
Well, I could tell you, I was actually going to look for the update on that. There was an article that was published probably a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. And at that time, it was over 800 that had closed, been acquired, or merged in, I think, a 15 to 20 year period. I know that's a long period of time, but it's pretty recent when you think about the longevity of higher ed. That's a lot of schools, over 800.
And I think it's probably going to continue even more.
Absolutely.
Now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do we as leaders need to keep in mind for the future of education? Is there anything beyond what we've already said? Because this could continue to be a rough ride.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, there's a couple of things that can help someone be successful and ride it out. So first of all is just the way we think. I think about thinking, believe it or not, I do think about thinking. And it's new ways of thinking. I'm not talking about new ideas or new ways of doing things. It's just think differently than you usually do. And that takes some time to cultivate those skills, those abilities. Because like I've said many times here, I'm naturally wired a certain way to think. For me, that would be thinking about things from an artistic perspective. That's not who I am, but that builds new perspectives, new ideas, new neural pathways. So I think different ways of thinking, reframing some of the problems. I think too often when it comes to problems, we think about the surface level symptoms rather than digging deep to what is the true problem. And also a possibilities mindset. So not a growth mindset, but a possibilities mindset. What if we could do this with no limitations? There's always limitations, but we come back and we figure out how to work within those limitations later. But that just opens up things, opens up thinking. It's going to continue to be a wild ride, I'm sure, for quite a while. So building skills to be flexible and agile, that's really important. And being able to work in, either adapt to or work in, rapidly changing circumstances and radically changing circumstances. And if you're not able to do that, at least develop resilience strategies, because not everybody is comfortable or gets comfortable with those kinds of settings. So just figure out how to be resilient there. And I mentioned it before, gray, working in the gray and the unknowing. There's a lot of that right now, not just in higher ed. Yeah. And so the ability to become comfortable living in those circumstances or have the resilience strategies to do so, I think it's going to be really, really critical. I mentioned nothing about higher ed knowledge and skills, did I? Because I really don't think it's about that. I really think it's about how you work, how you interact with others, how you serve other people. It's not necessarily the basic skills and knowledge. Everybody will have that. It's how you do things. Yeah.
And everything you just said is such an uncomfortable place for most people who are craving security, stability. And I think we just have to get used to that. Like, we have this thing in our head that it's supposed to be this way, instead of what you're saying is like, let's just accept what is.
Yeah.
And work with that, because that's the new normal.
It is, unfortunately, the new normal. And higher ed has been around for a very long time. We have a certain way of doing things. And for people that have found that comfort in that by working it in higher ed, that is changing. It has been changing. It's going to change even more as the years go on. Some of the new models, what I think are very interesting, creative, and exciting models that are coming out, just dramatically different in every possible way. The times are changing again.
I wish we could roll that song out.
I know, that would be great, wouldn't it?
Oh, well, thank you so much for being with us. I feel a little discomforted with all that you've said. Just, it's an uncomfortable place to be and acknowledge to ourselves. Yeah. You were great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate the learning experience, Amy. Thank you.
I'm here to provide you with that. So.
Okay.
Thanks so much. And I wish
you
and all of us well in this final stage of the merger. By the time this podcast comes out, we will be Notre Dame of Maryland University, the School of Integrative Health.
Yeah, we will have a new home.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Thanks so much, Chris.
Okay. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you to Chris Sachs for coming on the podcast today and just really allowing herself to shine and be seen authentically. I think that's one of the things that I really admire about Chris. And by the time that we are airing this podcast, we will all be working for Notre Dame of Maryland, the School of Integrative Health, which is a graduate school that is also part of a comprehensive university, meaning there's undergraduate and graduate programs. And this school year, going into the fall semester, Notre Dame of Maryland will be who we work for, and Maryland University of Integrative Health will no longer exist. So what that means for the yoga therapy and Ayurveda programs is that we are now couched within a really amazing school of integrative health that is very connected to more traditional programs that Notre Dame also offers in terms of occupational therapy, physician assistant, nursing, education, pharmacy, that we will all be graduate schools together. And that's a really exciting place to be, to basically move all of our integrative health departments into a university that has more allopathic medicine. Some of the other areas of integrative health that will be coming over into this new university are things like health promotion, health coaching, nutrition, herbal studies. We have so many interesting things. We have integrative health, we have yoga therapy, we have Ayurveda. I'm sure I'm forgetting some of them. So just think of all these integrative health modalities and departments merging together with more allopathic. And that crossover, that ability to talk to one another, to work together, to publish together, to train each other's students, that is going to be a very remarkable thing. And so wish us well as we transition to Notre Dame of Maryland. And we look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks for being here. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We appreciate you as our listeners, because without you, there would be no Yoga Therapy Hour. It's your comments, your calls, your emails, your texts of support and well wishes and affirmations that keeps us going. So don't feel hesitant to give us a review if you've been enjoying the podcast. Go wherever it is that you listen, find the review section, and let people know how much you love the Yoga Therapy Hour. It's a small thing that you could do for us that would help spread the word of goodness, benevolence, and help us help all the people out there to suffer less. All right, everybody, have a great week. We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.